Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Eric.
How are you?
I am pretty good. How are you?
Doing well, thank you. Doing especially well after a week or 8 days off. I'll tell you this, Jeff. You know, we watched that Michael Jordan documentary, The Last Dance, on ESPN for the last 5 weeks. And there is a part right in the middle where Jordan retires all of a sudden in the middle of his career. He goes and he plays baseball. And this is just on the tail end of these allegations about him having a gambling problem. And there's always been these rumors where people believe that David Stern sent Michael Jordan away for a little bit to sort of like fix the gambling problems, get him away from the NBA, and then allow him to come back without the embarrassment of an actual suspension. So I ask you now, knowing that you're on the inside of this whole thing, did Tory Lanez send us away from Quarantine Radio and allow us that 7 or 8 days off to sort of like separate ourselves from the pack and come back and not embarrass ourselves?
Wow, this intro has taken like a lot of turns. I did not expect the conspiracy theories to go the way that they did in this sort of curlicue manner.
So, yes?
Yeah. Tory Lanez.
That's right.
Shouts to our brother.
You win.
In Quarantine Radio. Who he sent us away, and now we come back looking great. Is that what you're saying?
That's what I'm saying. We look great, Jeff. Yeah. We started this podcast, Waste Time with the Surreal. Actually,
what a roller coaster!
Actually, 5 years ago this week. So shout out to us.
Yeah,
for...
shout out to Jimmy Brantley for telling us, because we had no idea. You know, Jimmy Brantley texts me. He goes, "Wednesday's a big day for you." I go, "Why?" Said, "It's your 5 year anniversary." I had no idea.
5 years, 307 episodes of Waste Time with It's the Real, 51 episodes of Quarantine Radio, you know, a bunch of It's the Real classic episodes, some Saturdays with the Indoor Boys episodes, a lot of content out there over 5 years. And here we are after a week off, and we've decided to go back to the weekly way that we do these things.
Yeah. I mean, there is no reason for us to be doing a daily podcast because there's so many other options out there right now. I think that a lot of the stories that we would tell are being told.
And very well. Yeah. So
and
shout out to everybody who's, you know, on Instagram Live. Shout out to everybody who is doing Twitch. Shout out to everybody who is starting podcasts now. What we do and what we do well is a waste of time with It's the Real.
Yep.
And what this week is also given us is a chance to assess bigger picture ideas beyond the podcast. And we spent a lot of time working on those projects, and we feel really good about them. So aside from the ideas, aside from I did laundry.
That's so dope.
Aside from not being awake every night until...
I gave myself a haircut.
2 a.m. I was about to ask you, what are you most proud of this week?
Well, that's not what I'm most proud of. I gave myself a haircut, and the reviews are in from both my brothers. One called it a bad mushroom, and the other one said that it looked like I lopped off a chunk of hair on one side.
Mm.
So... I think that it's like forward thinking. I think that it's you guys just don't get it.
Got it.
But it is definitely a haircut I've never had before.
Jeff, I will tell you, you look great in headphones.
It looks really good from the front.
You look great in headphones.
It looks great from the front.
No one is saying otherwise.
If I turn my head in either direction, I think it gets a little dicey.
And you didn't want to video this episode. Why, Jeff? Jeff's like, oh, no, not the work. I don't want to, you know, edit. I don't want to, you know, Photoshop.
I just think that, like, the stories sort of get lost in a visual medium, you know?
I want to say this. We so appreciate everybody who was part of Quarantine Radio. That's the guests. That's the listeners. That's the people who encouraged us when we didn't know what to do.
Wait, there's also the people who said that they listened to it and definitely did.
Yeah.
Shout out to anybody who was like, you want to know what? Like, you guys are killing it right now. Because everybody would tell us, you guys are killing it. We're like, yeah, I know you're not listening. I know you're not listening.
They're like, you still got one guest, right? Yeah. So anyway, we're back to a weekly schedule. We have guests lined up once a week. It's something that you guys can look forward to. It's something that we will look forward to. And again, lots more projects on the way from us. You know, the podcast is one facet to us, and 5 years is a pretty tremendous run for us.
I totally forgot. Like, in this conversation, I forgot that we had talked about the 5-year anniversary.
Shout out to Jimmy Brantley.
Shout out to Jimmy Brantley. Shout out to us. I guess we get like sweatpants or something. Like, yeah, what's a gift that like we get for 5 years?
I'm down for sweatpants. By the way, you guys should look out for new merch coming very, very soon. Jeff has designed new t-shirts.
Yeah.
So it is perfect for that summertime weather on the way. Jeff, before we get into anything else, I do want to say that one thing that came out of Quarantine Radio was a ton of people who joined our Patreon. And what patreon.com/itsthereal is a way for you guys who really, really, truly, and honestly believe in what we've done for the past 13 years, who believe in what we have going on right now, and who really believe in what we have in the future and have invested in us and have shown that investment through $2 donations, through $3 contributions, through $5 contributions, $10, and on from there. And we have really, really cool givebacks that we were talking about just today that we're going to let you know about very soon. Get-togethers on Zoom that are not just us talking. It's not us talking at you. It is going to be a very unique and fun experience on Zoom. We're going to have merch giveaways. We're going to have lots of different experiences that being a member and investing in us will reward you back in certain ways. And we wanted to shout out a bunch of you who joined very recently.
Yeah, I just want to say, it almost sounds like you're making it all up, but I promise that it is real.
No, it's real.
Like, you were just giving like zero details. You're like, I promise any... You guys, it's going to be so good. It's going to be so good, well, and it's going to be so real. And but yes, we do have actual givebacks that we are doing on our Patreon, and you should go check it out, patreon.com/itsthereal. I want to shout out Patrick Cahill. I want to shout out Bram Gonshar, Michaela Barnett, Sean Mannion, Lily, no last name, just Lily, Haley Riggs, Annie Ma, Joshua Wilborn, Leslie Guam, and Jack Hamilton.
And that's in addition to the hundreds of other people who have made it their business to be in business with our business. Shout out to all of you guys out there. Again, these givebacks are real.
They are so real. Guys, they're just sitting in our apartment. You just can't see it because the cameras are off. They're, like,
yeah.
They're so real.
No, but truly and honestly, we appreciate you guys, and we're going to show that back to you in lots of cool ways. One other thing I wanted to mention from this week off was that we started off Styles P's new album, Ghost Your Enthusiasm. We are the first track on there. We are the 11th track on there. As, you know, guys who grew up on the locks, as guys who have found it just mind-blowing to be great friends with each of the members of the locks, to be asked to bring our talents to Styles' album was, you know...
Yeah, and I mean, like,
I'm at a loss for words.
It got the best reaction, which is, like, the best part.
Yeah, so shout out to everybody who's checking that out. It is available everywhere right now, and that's why we were excited to get on the phone with our man, Styles P, and talk to him about a whole bunch of stuff, including whether if he found our skits to be just trash.
Would he still include it?
He would not use them. Yeah. So shout out to Styles P. Shout out to Jadakiss. Shout out to Sheik Luch. Shout out to all you guys.
Why are we shouting out Jada and Sheik? We didn't get on their album.
Jeff, I'm trying to, you know, butter them up. See if we can, you know,
all right,
make it onto that Lox album, which is on the way.
Yeah. I do want to say right before we get into this, an actual give back, which you did not mention, which is weird because it is a real thing that's happening. We have extra episodes of our podcast that we're going to be putting up on our Patreon just for our Patreon supporters. Our first one is with Al Harrington.
And that is at patreon.com/itsthereal. Jeff, when do you want to get into this episode?
Right now.
Yo, what up? It's Eric, a.k.a. the Thighmaster, a.k.a. Squeezing Clips.
Yo, what up? It's Jeff, a.k.a. Bored in the House. Yeah, I'm in the house, Bored, a.k.a. Clarice from Silence of the Lambs.
What up? It's SP the Ghost, a.k.a. Holy Sabbath, a.k.a. The Hive, a.k.a. Golden Black Cloud.
Yeah, it's your third favorite podcast to waste time with. It's the real. SP, what's happening?
What's good, B?
Everything's good. Yo, first of all, congratulations on this new album. It's called Ghost Your Enthusiasm, Styles David. Obviously, it's a play on the incredible and long-running Curb Your Enthusiasm by Larry David. What was for you the sort of impetus for this project?
Of course, I'm a big Curb fan, and I think I receive a lot of the same energy, Larry. Just a cool guy. For some reason, I get approached by dickheads in all kinds of situations. And I'm like a logical guy. Am well, I Park Prick? Sometimes, maybe. I'm pretty logical other than that. So I find myself in a lot of weird, enthusiastic situations. So I like to, you know, ghost the enthusiasm. Of the
when way. Does that reveal itself? Like, I mean, like, I know that you and I have a sort of, like, you know, tense relationship. But, like, you know, what about, like, are you when you're going to the store, like, what... Where are places that you've had, like, arguments with people?
Twitter.
Oh, my God.
Oh, well, yeah.
Twitter. I don't really argue with people in real life. That's just because of my past history. An argument can lead to a fight. So if I argue with you or if I even go back and forth with you, it's because I love you and I know I can't get to a fight. But pretty much when it comes to strangers and things like that, I try to just stay cool. Everybody's opinion. Everybody's really opinionated, and opinions like assholes. So everybody got one. So
you have such a distinct sense of humor that we love. You know, a lot of people like come to us and they're like, "Yo, out of the three Lox members, who has the best sense of humor?" And honestly, like, you're all really specifically funny, but yours can be like, I feel like, pretty deceptive. People could take it as like, "Yo, Styles is like really, really darkly funny." Or Styles is like super serious about something and I don't know how to take it. Who does not understand it like the most? Like, does Ajua not really understand her sense of humor, or has she gotten it after all?
She definitely gets my sense of
humor. But like, if you get yourself in a situation where you know, you throw the chair at Puff, right, in that meeting, is that funny to you, or is that like super serious, and can you explain yourself afterwards?
I mean, it's funny later on in life. It's like funny when I think about some of the shit. At the time, it wasn't funny. It was funny because I twisted my ankle throwing the shit. So when I think back, laughing at it, it's funny shit. You know, I think with people with me, like, I'm a like, if you know me, you know me, and if you don't, I probably don't give a fuck. So it would go either way. So a person might take me as super serious, but if I like don't know a person, I don't think my opinion of them nor vice versa really matters because we don't know each other.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? So I tend to not joke with people I don't know. Like I said, if you know me, I joke around with you. Like, people who know me get my sense of humor.
Yeah.
You know, I love to laugh. You know, they know I'm not, I'm only serious with serious shit. Like, other than that, I'm pretty much getting stoned and drinking juice and just trying to laugh, like, you know what I mean?
Who has the best sense of humor that we don't know about? Like, is X a super funny guy? Like, was
definitely
really
DMX is super funny. His character's incredible.
Like, what kind of sense of humor does he like to, like, rag on people, or is he just like super heady, or what kind of sense of humor does he have?
I say he has a very witty sense of humor. He's not like a rag on people too much. I think unless it's his people and they really cool. Like I said, I think certain people only really fucking joke with people in certain ways that they know, like, you know what I mean? And other than that, he's just, you never seen an X interview? He's fucking witty as shit. He's funny. He's blatantly blunt, like, you know what I mean? He's very blunt about what he says. So, it, you know, I love X's sexy sense of humor, man.
Do you
it's actually,
go ahead.
He has an essence about himself, and his jokes are life. Like, really makes you think about life.
Do you think
those aren't jokes then? Those are like proverbs.
Life is a joke.
life is a joke.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. Did you see a couple days ago on Twitter, someone had posted a clip from Sypha Sound's improv show down at UCB, and Sheik was the guest. And I don't know how it got brought up, but someone was talking about the Benjamins, and Sheik was talking about when you guys went down to the studio and you heard the beat, and it happened to be Missy Elliott was there, and she was the one who picked out that Jada was going to be on this part and Sheik was going to be on this part, and then they were going to collaborate on writing, and you were sort of like pushed out of the way. And, you know, the crowd loved that, and that's sort of like a funny moment, especially in retrospect. Did you find humor in that moment, and can you laugh about it now?
Yeah, for me, I never really liked the beat, you know what I mean? To be honest with you, they didn't either. Sheik Artis didn't like the beat either, so it wasn't something. I don't really, I use everything as a motivational force for me, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, you're like Michael Jordan.
I wish, but I got great work ethic though. That's one thing. But yeah, when it comes to music and rhymes, like I just pretty much focus in on what I do, and I take the good with the bad because I always feel like I'm just lucky to be here. Like seriously, I shouldn't even been able to have a rap career. So that's why I try to stay cool as possible and pretty much give off energy and try to remain humble because I didn't have to have a career. I could have been locked up for a long time. Like, you know what I mean? By the grace of God, I slid out of something by the skin of my teeth. So I always look at it as just whatever happens, happens. I'm just glad to be here.
So this is all just bonus time right now?
Yeah, for me, like everything, the whole thing since day one, it was like, holy shit, I could have not been here. So to be here and to just be able to do it, period, it's cool. And you got to always celebrate when somebody else is doing good. Like, you know, I think that's something my mom taught me as a child, and it kind of stuck with me. Like, if you get jealous or you get green with envy, then you won't be able to focus in and do what you got to do for yourself. If you don't make something, you didn't get it. That's just how life flows, but you keep it pushing. So it was a great thing. Like, you know what I mean? Shit, I still got the award. They put the award and they got to rhyme the first on that shit.
What's the biggest room that you've been in where you looked around and you were like, well, you know, like this is where like I deserve to be. Like this is, you took ownership of the fact that you were there.
It's hard to say because I felt like we belonged before we got here. Like, you know what I mean? I think that's the part that got us here, is knowing we belonged. Like, you know what I mean? But more than anything, I would say going back to just, instead of more so of a room or one particular room, I just remember getting accolades from the elder MCs. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So where a Rakim and a KRS says, you nice and you doing your thing to me. You know, that was like the most amazing shit. These are people I trained under that I've studied their styles of. It's like Bruce Lee and they like the master hips, like, you know what I mean? So I looked at that as anytime, you know, those who came before us would say we nice or yo, we fuck with y'all and y'all do this. It was just an honor. Like, you know what I mean? Even be honest, just first coming in the game. We first came in the game, the bad boy, Big was the illest MC out doing the illest things. For him to even say, yo, y'all are fucking dope. Y'all rhyme. Like, no, y'all rhyme. So for me, I would say those two things.
But also Biggie like sort of like came at you on that first song. I mean, yeah, for your skills, but for the fact that you guys were, he felt like you guys were getting ahead of yourselves in terms of like talking about like jewelry and money and that sort of thing.
Yeah, it probably was. That's what all MCs do. That almost happens almost on every song. Some people just don't get it.
Styles, when you think about a project in 2020 and you come out and you hit us up and you're like, yo, I need your guys' talents. I need you to be funny on a couple of skits for me. Is this something that goes back all the way to, you know, growing up off of albums, you know, like Biggs or other people's, where it's like, yo, there is that element of comedy and you need to have it in a rap album that matters?
I mean, it depends how you're feeling. Like, for me personally, I treat every project different. Like, you know what I mean? I don't go into any project with a certain structure. I go with more how it's feeling. And I felt like that was needed. Like, you know what I mean? For this particular project, it fit in perfectly. I think I'll, you know, the way we vibe and flow with certain shit, I felt like that would fit.
Yeah.
On interludes, like, you know what I mean? And especially it's we could all appreciate Larry's, like, you know what I mean, sense of humor.
Yeah.
And things like that. I feel like people with certain sense of humor is like, I feel like a lot of my Twitter people over Twitter through the few years have got my sense of humor. Like, you know what I mean? Or a lot of people go, yo, you're fucking crazy, weird guy, or funny. So it's like people get it. I don't know. I'm just big on being myself and making what I feel like needs to be made when I want to make it. Like, you know what I mean? Certain times I do that, and this just felt like that was needed. I really do what I feel is needed.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, would you have kept this on after you asked us, and knowing our relationship, if we didn't do a good job, would you have still kept us on the project?
Fuck no. You asked me stupid shit.
Yo. So Styles, about a month and a half ago, 2 months ago, hits us up and he's like, yo, I need you guys on this. Think about it. Get back to me. And we would talk and we would text regularly or whatever. And then one day, like a month later, Styles hits us up and he goes, yo, we're going to mastering tonight. I'm going to go take a shower. I'm going to smoke a joint, have something ready in an hour. And we're like,
yeah, and so Eric freaked out and was like writing down ideas and like putting a lot of work in. I took a nap.
and we congregated an hour later. We called Styles up and created these two skits that live on the album. We didn't hear back from Styles because that was a Saturday night, and I think there was a versus battle going on.
Yeah.
So we didn't hear from Styles until like 1 a.m. to let us know that it was all right. So we sat there through this whole battle being like, do we fuck up our shot? Like, is this going to happen? And actually, you know what? Shout out to Poobs, who hit us right away and was like, yo, you guys fucking hit it out of the park. And we were like, oh, dope. But
yeah.
Still, we got
to
wait and see what
Styles thinks. Yeah, we have to see what
Styles thinks. I was high. I had a busy day.
No, but you know what? You know what meant a lot to us is, like, if we think about, like, Biggie's skits and you talk about, like, you know, shitting on the bitch and all that, right? And it's done with that sort of like one person's on the phone, one person's in the studio. That's what this felt like, you know, that it had that energy to it.
Yeah, hold on. Get your ass up, Madonna. Hey, get up. Come on.
This is the best because we were on the phone with Jim Jones last week and he was yelling at his dog. So this is like a continuation of that. I appreciate that. Styles, when you started this quarantine or this sort of new way of living where during the pandemic everyone is staying at home for most of their time, did you know you were going to drop a project or were you just like, I don't know what tomorrow's going to look like?
Nah, I still went with my schedule, what I said I was going to do. Like, you know what I mean? I felt like, fuck it. Like, get the music out. Like, you know what I mean? It's a lot going on. And just get the music out. People need relief, you know?
Yeah. And, I mean, you've got a lot of music that's sort of on the way still.
Yeah, definitely. You know, always work. Locke's album coming out pretty soon.
Well, yeah,
Love single out.
But does that mean that you're still going to the studio and you're still, like, conducting yourself on the same schedule as you did?
No, it works different because one, we rebuild in D-Block Studio. Two, during the quarantine thing, it's been a whole different vibe. So I just go to a studio where it's me and the engineer. It's just us two in the studio pretty much. And it's weird it's cool. I work like that a lot, but it's not forced. Like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Are you somebody who works better with like a crowd around you in the studio, or are you better when you're like working alone?
It depends how I feel. Most of the time I prefer alone or a slight crowd.
Mm-hmm.
Like just to be, you know, get some normal human time and sometimes ideas and a lot of thoughts are you get just from talking to people or hearing different things. So,
What's a song that you did that or a verse where there were just like a ton of people in the room? Like, did you where were you when you recorded Akon's Locked Up verse?
D-Block Studios. There was definitely a ton of people around. I do both, like, you know what I mean? I prefer not a ton of people around, but if I think that's one thing an MC has to do is kind of train himself to be prepared for any situation.
Yeah,
because like, that's just how I like to work. But say I'm going to do, you know, pre-corona, if I'm going to do a feature, I went to do features and people have 40 dudes in the studio. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, do you
like
feel
a small room?
Yeah. Do you feel like performative in that situation, or are you like a little more hesitant to say like, yo,
nah, I'm cocky as fuck. If the more people there, and it depends on the energy I'm getting to. Like, so if it's a cool energy, then I'm cool. If it's like a skeptical energy, then it just kind of makes me cockier, and I probably say some extremely hard shit.
Yo, Styles, when people think of like New York MCs, you are at the very, very top of that list. Was it anything weird to link up with Lil Jon to, you know, to rhyme on a Southern beat that he brought?
No, that's my guy.
No, like, of course, yeah.
Well, how did you meet him?
I can't remember. I think I met him at an event or I have the slight. I have this garbageous memory for a rapper. I smoke so much. It's like I focus on the rhymes more than the other shit. But I met him a while before we even did that song. I was always actually cool with John. You actually know what's crazy? I snuck into my first time ever in my first time ever in Germany. God bless the dead. I snuck in with Big Cap and Little John.
Wow. Yo,
wait, how did you?
I've seen him
in Amsterdam.
Yeah.
We were all in Amsterdam. They had a show in Germany. I just happened to be in Amsterdam. I wasn't doing shit. I was dolo. So I was like, me and Cap, God bless. We were smoking all day. We went to Mad Things, Mad Coffee Shops. He tapped out on me. He said, I can't fuck with you, P. You smoke a lot. So he tapped out on me, but he said, yo, let's get up later. We got this show. So I'm thinking the show is actually like in Amsterdam. Then they're like, nah, we're going to Germany. And I'm like, oh, nah, I can't go to Germany. I ain't got the paperwork or what. Like, they have paperwork. And I was like, nah, just get in the back. Before we get to the border, lay in the trunk. It was like a Jeep. So I was laying under the back seat. They got in. I was chilling. Got in, got out, no problem.
Yo, you know, I tell people all the time.
By the way, it pays to be like 5'8".
Oh.
Huh?
It pays to be as tall as you are. Like, I could never hide in the trunk. Yeah.
Yo, I tell people all the time, Big Cap really was like that route for Southern artists to get up here, especially Lil Jon, because Cap, I'm pretty sure, broke, as far as I'm concerned, he broke B.I.B.I. here in New York at the Tunnel by just like going in on that record.
Yeah, he broke a lot of records in the Tunnel. Cap broke a lot of shit, man. Cap was a beautiful soul. Is a beautiful soul, part of self. Beautiful, beautiful, humble soul, man.
When you think back about the Tunnel, what does that venue and those nights mean to you?
I can't hear that. Golden era. All that comes in my mind is golden era. You know what I mean? Because it was like we used to go to the Tunnel a lot as regular people before we actually made it. Like, you know what I mean? Then making it, then skipping the line. Than all of that shit. So it was beautiful.
Well, I mean,
it was beautiful. It was one of the most beautiful times I feel in New York City hip hop nightclub scene.
And you just shouted out Peter Gation. Like, how did you meet him? What was your relationship with him?
I don't know Peter Gation. I just know niggas like him. He's a tunnel guy.
Well, these days, obviously, like, you know, kids are sort of getting used to this idea of Travis Scott on Fortnite, and that is a concert to them, right? Like, who knows what, like, live events are going to look like moving forward. But when you think back about, like, the Tunnel and that energy in there, whenever an artist showed up or if you're in the crowd or whatever, like, that is the definition of New York hip-hop, right?
Yeah. I definitely would say that.
Can you... All right, Styles, take us through the recording studios you guys would use for Money, Power, Respect, and then when you transition to go into, like, Rough Riders studios, and then the difference between those two environments.
Well, we was in Rough Riders studio way before we was recorded at anything. We were recorded at Daddy's House, of course, for Money, Power, Respect.
Yep.
But before we did that, we had always recorded at Rough Riders studio.
But what was the difference in energy in each of those places?
Well, I think Rough Riders studio was home base for us. It was something familiar. It's like being at home. One is sitting in our hometown. One, we already worked out of there before we even made it. And it was just a different kind of energy. By the time we was doing We Are the Streets, you know, we went through our transition with Bad Boy. We had Done Money, Power, Respect. We had, you know, we had certain ideas we wanted to complete. So just working on We Are the Streets and Rough Riders was just... It was like being at home, actually. As to where Bad Boy was really cool, like, you know what I mean? But it wasn't being at home.
But what made you transition from recording at Rough Rider Studios to establishing D-Block Studios, and what is the difference between...
Well, that's just coming up. We was getting older and becoming grown. You want to be able to work when you want to work, how you want to work, for as many hours as you want to work. Then you want to think about doing other things, like, you know what I mean? I think the artist mentality should always be business mentality too. Like, okay, I start like this. This is what I've done. This is what I did. Now what am I going to do?
Yeah, we would talk with, like, you know, all the Rockefeller guys about baseline, and they sort of compared themselves and everybody being around, and, you know, the ideas that would flow because everyone was in the studio around each other, and the competition and the vibes, yeah, and the, all that, to Motown, right? And because everyone was in the Snake Pit up in Hitsville, up in Detroit. Did you guys feel that same kind of spark when you were at Rough Rider Studio, or even like over the last decade being at D-Block?
Yeah, I mean, for me, I always feel that spark because I have two partners. Besides anything else, I have two partners that Mom's Dope, so I don't really even need much to get inspired. Like, you know what I mean? When you're in a group, you automatically have someone to feed off their energy, especially, like, you know, when it's two dope people, you're gonna always stay inspired. But like, yeah, early Rough Riders, us, DMX, Mace running around, just other MCs, just it being a battle war zone, it just gives you a different kind of energy. I mean, steel sharpens steel, like, you know what I mean? That's in anything you do in life. It doesn't matter what your job is or what walk of life it is. When you're around people who are like-minded, who share the same passion, and, you know, the energy is good, you're bound to come out with some dope vibes and some dope music. Like, you know what I mean? One is competitive, and then one, everybody's sharing a likeness and a common goal of trying to get somewhere from doing something they love. So you can only get the best when you kind of take notice of it and just do what you do every day. Because the energy is just like, there's days I feel like shooting, I don't feel like working, I have no plans to do anything, and I'll go to the studio and I hear Sheikah Kiss verse, then I'm back. Like, that whole feeling of how I just felt leaves, and now I just feel creative and I feel like getting busy. So,
yeah,
energy is very important.
Do you think that you were ahead of your time in terms of your want to be independent, your need to vocalize your opinions and your freedom to do so?
Yeah, but also, like, who did you model your own career after?
I think I took – this is going to sound weird – I think I modeled my career after not anyone particularly in music. I looked at it more so as of this is fucked up to say, a drug dealer. Supply and demand.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
Supply and demand. I always looked at it like from a drug dealer standpoint, a big corporation standpoint, and a fan standpoint. So as a fan, I would always know like if I love the MC and love the shit he said, that I wanted to hear as much of from him as possible. So with being a fan of that, I take that model with being an MC, and then going, okay, if I want to make sure I'm doing this like this or doing this like that, then I need to kind of run it like a business. Like, you know what I mean? I have to really run it like a business. I'm not just an artist, I'm a businessman. There's money involved. So anytime there's money involved, structure involved, you got to look at it more so like a business. So started looking at it like, this is what successful entrepreneurs do, and this is what successful drug dealers do. I've seen it both happen, and I kind of put a little mixed twist of it on my own.
And
meshed them both in the middle.
What was the, like, straw that got you to that point? Because, I mean, like, you had been on labels before, and then at a certain point you were disillusioned with the system that existed, and you were just like, well, fuck that, I'm going to do this.
Well, I think sometimes common sense kicks in. I started looking like, it's way too many artists. I started looking at kind of like the structure of the label. Like, when you're an artist, then you go to the label has, think about just all the people who works at the label. Like, you know what I mean? Then you start thinking about, damn, look how many other artists they got to work with. Then you start thinking about, are they going to give a fuck about my shit if I'm not the top spot? Like, you know what I'm saying? Or in the top spot? And the answer is no. So if you like the fucking 10th hardest artist on the label, money wise I'm talking about, not talent wise but like, you know what I mean, fame money wise then you're not gonna get as much attention as you want. So fucking Jan from publicity and Bob from marketing is focusing on the other fucking, they main acts that's selling millions of records. So when I kind of took that in the notion, you start looking at it like, okay, I gotta put my shit in my own hands and work it to the point where I know it's worked. You can't really complain about it if I'm doing the work.
Yeah, I mean, well, can you talk about the first time that you actually did go independent? Like, and the work that was required to work your records. Like, What was the biggest challenge at that point, and what was the easiest thing for you?
The easiest thing that it was, one second. The easiest part was it was I didn't have so much of a headache. I didn't have a bunch of label people to deal with. I knew exactly who I was dealing with, why I was dealing with them. The hard part was just doing extra jobs you wasn't doing before. Like, you know what I mean? Just staying on top of everything. It was more new than hard. Like, I wouldn't want to say hard. I would rather choose the word difficult.
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of people who, and listen, you know, when we had our first manager, a comedy manager back in like 2009 or 10 or something like that.
Yeah.
And we thought that was like the sign of like, we made it, right? But they're not going to do the work that you have to do. And it's funny because because a lot of people now are just like, yo, all I need is someone to represent me and take me in the building and do this, that, and the other thing. And it's like, no, you have to put in the work. They have to do the intangibles that like you cannot do, you know? So as an independent artist, as you know what? You're somebody who is ahead of your time on being independent, on smoking weed, on being, you know, strongly
smoking weed.
You know, but like in music, putting that out there and making it like a
Styles
thing.
Wasn't like the Jackie Robinson of smoking weed.
Snoop was.
Yeah, I know. I'm just saying Styles has
Red
been
Redman.
Yeah.
F. Snoop.
I think you've done your thing.
I think you mean for street rappers.
Yes.
More hardcore underground.
So having been ahead of the curve on a whole bunch of things, what's one thing you feel like you were ahead of the curve on that just did not take? Yo, juicing, that was another thing you were like on early. Like,
yeah.
I feel like you've had so many successes. What's one thing you thought, you know, you had the vision for it. You were like, yo, this is it. And it just didn't go.
Probably working films. With us. Wait, what'd you say?
Films.
It didn't work out?
I mean, I'm not where I want to be, so I can't say it worked out. I'm not a successful filmmaker, so I would say films.
Yo, people hear this all the time from you when you're like, you know, they'll see you on Twitter and you'll be like, fuck music, I'm retiring next year, I'm over this, I'm going to start, you know, doing anything else. How seriously should people take you when you say that?
Pretty serious. One day I'm going to find something that's going to, I guess, be therapeutic for me is kicking bars, which probably would be writing films. So, I don't know, like, sometimes I do it just because it's therapy for me. I know I got a core fan base that loves it, but like say for instance, like today, I got an album coming out at midnight.
Yes.
You guys are my friends. You're like the only media people I've spoken to all week. But you're my friends. So what the fuck am I doing? You know what I mean? But, like, I don't, you know, I stick around because the fans fuck with me. And, you know, other than that, but industry, it's like, if less you hear it from me, you pretty much, and I put out a lot of work. You don't really hear about it.
Well,
you
know to I mean? Be fair, you were supposed to talk to Fat Joe the other night, but the government shut down your phone.
The government shut down my shit, yeah. It did, I'm telling you.
Wait, take us through that whole thing, because I've seen you in real life sort of struggle with your phone, try to figure things out. I know when we've tried to do Instagram Lives with you, you'll have to call us on the other line and see like how that works. Even if people watched you talk to Nori a couple weeks ago, getting you to turn your phone and figure out how to unlock the feature that keeps the phone, you know, vertical rather than horizontal was a task. How much do you think that it was your fault that you couldn't connect with Fat Joe?
Nah, that wasn't my fault.
That was the government.
That was the government.
Yeah.
I got on Wi-Fi. I did everything, man. I fucking did everything. I sent the request. I put the Wi-Fi on. I did all that shit. That was the government. They didn't want me talking to the people.
Yeah.
They didn't want me to tell them the shit I got to say. It wasn't really because they you don't think it was the government? Corey was on before me. He's the government. Part of the government. He thought he was saying healthy shit. They knew him. They was like, we can't have him. And then a street dude come behind him saying the same shit. They fucked my shit up, man. I know it's the government. I definitely have problems with phones, though. I've always had my whole life. I don't know why. They either don't work. I don't know if I got fucking something in my body that deads them or something.
Your son, Noah, who's a great friend and a great producer, is also on this album. He's been on the last couple projects as well. When it comes to listening to his beats, what are you looking for? And do you give him instruction in terms of like how you guys want to collaborate? Or is it like, you know, hands off? Because you have someone like, you know, Doc Rivers, you know, has Austin Rivers traded to his team. And it's just like, well, you can't treat this necessarily like father and son. It's like coach and player, right? So how do you and Noah operate when it comes to just making music?
Well, I just approach him as I would approach any other producer. You know, really though, he kind of, I guess being my son, he makes shit that caters to me sometimes or knows the sounds I like or the thing, or sometimes he'll, you know, pull out something and go, I think your sound will want this. Like, you know. And so it's pretty simple to be he tell you the truth. It's kinda just, hey, I need this, this is what I'm looking for. I want up tempo, I want this, I need that sound. Or even besides that, I'll go, this is how I'm feeling. I want to do this kind of joint.
Well, you know what? Get it. You know what Noah wants? Noah wants the HBO Go password.
Yo, take us through your experience of taking mushrooms with Noah.
Because, in quarantine.
Yeah, in quarantine. Because Ajua put that up, and I was like, and she's like, I'm going to take videos of this. And I was like, please send me those videos. She has not sent those to us just yet. But what was your experience taking mushrooms with your son, Noah?
It was pretty groovy. It was pretty groovy, to say the least. It was chilling. That's kind of chilling. It was a cool 420.
Yeah, I mean, like, had you done it before with him?
Nah, that was our first trip.
What was the vibe that was like in the room?
Same fucking vibe as always. I'm a horrible dad, but I'm cool. I'm either the most amazing dad or the biggest piece of shit ever. It's like a mixture between both, but we have a good time. I always felt like, though, seriously, as a parent, I always want my son to feel comfortable around me before he decides to go outside and do anything, like, you know, with someone else. So from smoking pot, I'd rather him smoke in the house, be there, be safe, don't have to worry about going to jail, getting arrested. You know, he's always been a good kid, a student, very smart. So,
well,
I think sometimes as parents, we gotta, you know, be cool as we can.
Yeah, wait, so this was his first time taking mushrooms ever?
No.
No.
Our first trip together.
Got it.
It wasn't his first trip, nor mine's.
Right.
Our first together.
Well, as you know, a father during these times, do you ever like look back at your son and just think, oh my God, I can't believe like he's like, you can't believe you've made it to this point. But do you look at your son and be like, yo, how did he come out of like this household? Like, I'm 50% responsible for that. And like, is it just shocking to you that you helped create this human being and he's standing right in front of you as passionate about music as you are and like as interested in what the world holds as you are and everything else?
Yeah, I mean, it's a proud moment. It's always a proud moment. You know, as you want each generation to do better than the last generation, and we pretty much speak about that, like, you know what I mean? Their lifestyle was better. His and God bless his sister's lifestyle was better than his mother's or mine coming up. And ours was better than our parents. So it's for him to kind of understand that, grasp the vibe, and, you know, be smarter and better, which he's pretty much doing. So it makes you proud.
Styles, what did going to South Africa mean to you, and what did you get out of there, like, spiritually and an understanding of your ancestry?
I mean, everything. I mean, to go home, be able to bring my mom home, see her happy, see my land, see my people. It was very spiritual, and it was very surreal, and it was very amazing and eye-opening, to say the least. It was one of my most beautiful experiences ever, probably, in life. So, yeah, can't wait to do it again, actually.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, unfortunately, it's going to take, like, a second. But I want to ask, what when your mom went back and to see a very changed South Africa, what was that like for her?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It was a surreal thing. When my mom left, it was apartheid.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So to go back and see it and And for her, it was amazing to see people not having to suffer how she had to suffer, and, you know, those she came up with, and just, you know, seeing the kids be able to move around. Of course, there's still a lot of shit and a lot of problems, but just to see change is a beautiful thing. So to see her be able to see that and see her, you know, feel proud, it was a beautiful thing.
What was the most familiar thing for her?
Her hometown.
So, I mean, like...
her hometown, the food, everything, it was... she fit right. She was right at home.
You're an adult man. You have lived all this life, and you've gone through, you know, lots of twists and turns to get to this place. Do you feel like you still have twists and turns to go? Like, are you learning every day and feel like, you know, you're not put into any corner? You have, you know, pivots to make and adaptations to go through, and you're looking forward to, like, taking all these things in.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's a long journey. You know, I've came a long way, but I always feel I got a long way to go. God willing, if he keeps me alive and breathing and pushing, always want to learn. Knowing I know nothing, so definitely always more stuff to learn or try to learn or just try to adapt, try to see different things. So yeah, I think part of life is trying to constantly grow. You know, realize your mistakes, realize the good things about you, realize the bad things about you. Always try to figure to tweak it, always try to make it better, but accept that life is life and keep pushing and just keep trying to get the most out of it you can, really. That's my kind of motto.
When you approach an album and you put it out as a piece of art, are you trying to top yourself, or are you just comfortable with this is the story I want to tell, and that in itself is what, you know, you're proud of?
Or is it all just a money grab and this is just you put up whatever?
I don't look at it as... what's funny is people ask me that. I kind of never listen to any of my old music unless someone else is playing it or I get in a car. You know, the last thing I probably heard was whatever the last album I put out during the time I put it out, or trying to learn songs from it. Other than that, I'm not trying to top myself. I'm just trying to keep it moving while I have the ability. I always try to just not top the album, but top myself as an MC to make sure I could stay on a high level. And really, that's my personal challenge for myself, to see how long I could stay on a high level, because it's not a bunch of fucking accolades you get besides from the people who love you and, you know, consider me one of the top tier lyricists, which is a great thing. But it's more so to say, how long could I have been dope? You know what I mean? How long could I push the envelope? Especially with, I look at my peers and how many of them stay busy, and how I try to clock their work ethic and clock their consistency and just at least say, you know, I went hard.
Yo, we saw you, we saw the Lox perform at Sony Hall, man, I guess 4 months ago, something like that.
It feels like 8 years
ago. It does feel like a long time ago. But shout out to Ev Boogie and everybody who put that show on. You guys killed it. You brought back a whole lot of, like, mixtape tracks, songs you hadn't done in 20 years. How is that to go back and, like, sound check and learn and figure out, like, oh, what did I say through this?
It's just rough, but it works. It's rough, but it's fun.
Were you surprised by any verses that you were a part of?
Yeah, some days I'm very shocked. Like some days I just, I don't know. I think when you're constantly trying to move forward on something, you kind of forget shit. You forget a lot of shit, actually. Well, not you, I mean, I forget a lot of shit, and I'm like, oh shit, oh, oh wait a minute. I'm that fucking dude.
Yeah. Yeah.
See, but like, you are somebody, it's not surprising to me that you wouldn't listen to your old verses, but you are somebody who is introspective and you are somebody who thinks about your journey and all that stuff. Are you someone who can look back at, like, videos of your past performances, or, like, are you somebody who thinks about the past, you know, things that happened when you were 16, 17, and really, like, lives in that moment? Like, do you get nostalgic?
Yeah, I get a lot of nostalgia when I'm making music, though. That's what's funny. Like, I don't really get it regularly, but, like, say if I'm making music and something pops in my mind or something, then it's like I feel the moment. Like, you know what I mean? I think every part of that kind of thing makes you the person you are in that day. Like, you know what I mean? So it's kind of like you start remembering your journey, or what makes you tick, sort of, in a way?
We were talking to our friend Jinx, Brandon Jinx Jenkins. You know Jinx from State of the Culture, obviously.
Yeah.
You know, Mogul Podcast, all that stuff. And Jinx told us the other day that when you were on set at State of the Culture, he told you that Holiday from the Rough Riders compilation was his favorite song by you ever. And you were like, yo, you're a wild boy. Like, when you think back to that time, what do you think about Styles P or David Styles or whoever you were in recording a song like Holiday?
Yeah, what made you different then than you are now?
Violence. I think violence and just being just really when you get into hip hop but you have a very street background or you've been on the street, it was very hard for me to differentiate, like, you know, what was what. I just started all taking it in, because at that time, what people don't understand is a lot of rappers would get robbed or they would get played or get extorted if they were soft, like, you know what I mean. And we didn't do security. I wasn't gonna not be outside or not be able to go to places I've always went to or wanted to go. So I would say ego, anger, and less maturity. But that's kind of life. It going through a lot of shit. When you go through a lot of shit, you know, it kind of makes you aggressive sometimes if you don't get a mental hold of what you've been through and find a way to accept it and deal with the feelings. You know, it can get a grab on you.
Well, what's the moment that you can look back at and be like, yo, that was the turning point when I figured out that I was comfortable with myself, that I didn't need, you know, to keep looking over my shoulder in a certain way. I didn't need to act out in a certain way, or I didn't need to puff my chest up to make up for something else.
I don't know, because I think I always knew that, but just kind of when you're in the mix of something, I just got tired of getting in trouble, I would say. I just got tired of, more so than anything, I got tired of getting in trouble, and I got tired of, I'm a person who loves peace. Like, you know, I love to laugh, and I love peace. I like peace and quiet. I like chilling, and I love to laugh. So I think when you don't find peace in your life, or you don't find the peace that you're looking for, you start readjusting everything to find what you need. Like, you know, so for me, it was pretty much looking at it from that point of view, and as a businessman, and thinking about people who were looking up to me, besides being a parent, thinking about the youth, just saying maybe I could show a different way, at least play my part and go, hey, I know the story. You know the story. I know your story, you know, because knuckleheads don't want to hear from other people who are knuckleheads. So I kind of just took it as my job to try to move on, be better, spread the word, and kind of go from there, like, you know.
Yeah, I think, you know, everybody knows if they listen to your music, if they follow you on social media, everybody knows what family means to you. Everybody knows what, you know, the locks means to you. But beyond that, who is somebody who just, like, played such a major role in your life in leading you, or maybe, like, keeping you from going a certain way? Who's somebody who gave you advice or looked out for you, or just, like, tapped you on the shoulder and said, yo, like, you're doing the right thing?
Kind of everybody around me, really. Like, whoever's you said no family, no music.
Yeah.
All right, not family, not music. I would say my juice comrades.
Mm.
Besides my family and my wife, my mother, of course, my two partners in a group, I would say my juice comrades. They keep me, you know, and then people who come up to me on the street about health. It keeps me on my 1-2. It keeps me letting me know, all right, I'm fighting a cause that's worth it. You know what I mean? Try to stay as smart as possible, try to stay level as possible, try to be humble as possible, but remain yourself and, you know, just keep pushing forward. So I would say my juice comrades, and I would say I don't really have too many friends that ain't friends, like, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not one of them guys, like, you know, I'm not, I tell people I'm cool, but I'm not, I'm not over social, so the people I fuck with are the people I fuck with, and I pretty much get that from I get that from you guys.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean,
everybody who you connect with should have bring positive energy to you, a positive light, and just even seeing that sometimes keeps you on your 1-2, and it just makes you want to stay surrounded with people like that and just keep pushing forward. So that's what I try to do in life, period. Just try to surround myself with people I know I fuck with that are really genuine.
Yeah, I mean, like, I am always grateful, I think is the word, that you, like, we'd known Jada for
the longest,
like way longer than we known you. But when we became friends with you, then we became friends with the Locks. And so, like, what was it when you came over to our apartment and we had that first conversation? Like, how immediate was that that we were, like, actually friends for you? Like, when did you actually feel that in the moment, or was it after?
Yeah, I got the organic. I always go with a feeling from people. Like, you know what I mean? I go with energy more than anything. Like, I always go with energy, and when I walk somewhere on anything, I just try to, especially in a room or a room with a limited amount of people, the first thing I do is try to make sure I greet them properly and then see the energy I receive. Like, you know? And then from there, I looked around. I liked you guys' content. I looked around like I had set up. Then I seen the movies y'all was into. So it's really, really organic. Like, I'm a black white guy.
I think for us too, like, I think people, and I'm sure people who are listening to this already understand this, but man, we grew up off the Locks. You know, like, it meant everything to us to hear our bus driver playing Down Bottom. Like, you understand? Like we would, you know, wait to hear Green Lantern, like, play, you know, like, freestyles by you, or K-Slay play stuff by, like, you know, Sheik, or hear, you know, Jada talking to Angie. Like, that's how we grew up. Like if we could have had some, you know, Let the Locks Go shirts, we would have worn them every single day. Like our parents didn't understand, but the Locks was everything for us. And to be able to get to a place now where we're not only, like, you know, doing a podcast with you, we're not only, like, you know, calling you up just to, like, bullshit or, like, talk about versus battles or, like, all of that, but to actually be friends with you is the highest honor, honestly, in our life. And it's mind-blowing to us because, again, you know, there's that idea of separation. Yeah, you grew up like 10 minutes from us. Yeah, you know, you have this career, but when it's broken down to its finest form, all it is you're a funny guy who loves what you do. We're funny guys who love what we do. And somewhere in this world, we connected, and we can't, you know, thank you enough for the opportunity to rock with us regularly as friends, but also to put us on your album, which is something that lasts forever. It's just an absolute honor. So thank you for that.
The honor and pleasure is mine, my brothers. The honor and pleasure is mine.
We've been listening to a lot of your music just, you know, to get in that vibe. Obviously, everybody.
Well, no, we listened to your music just because.
No, I know, but I'm just saying specifically, there were songs that we revisited to just, you know, to hear again. And everybody knows about, you know, the respect that Rick Ross has for the Locks and the Locks has for Rick Ross. One song that gets overlooked, and it's funny because it just showed up in my iTunes the other day, and I was like, oh, right, you fucking murked this, was Keys to the Crib, which was.
Yeah.
Which was, you know, it's not like, you know, the biggest collaboration that you had, but it is such a fucking strong song. Talk about your respect for Rick Ross.
I fuck with him, man. I fuck with Ross. I think I love anybody who's a student in their craft, man. He's a very humble dude. It's cool. It's always a pleasure working with him. But I really respect him because he's really a student to the game. Like, you know what I mean? And that's what's really intelligent, I believe. I think that's why he does good business and does good moves. Like, he does what he does, but he's actually a real, real student of the craft and game. Which, you know, there are a lot of people who like that, but you could tell he's indebted in the study of the craft.
talk about another friend of ours, Poobs, who works with you guys, obviously, at D-Block Studios, writes with you on certain film ideas that you have, but, you know, might be under the radar for a lot of people who might just know Styles P. Talk about what Poobs brings to your guys' whole environment.
He brings what Phil Jackson brought to the Bulls.
LSD? You know?
Nah, smoke good direction, and a guy who knows how to keep things running, man. You know what I mean? All my mixtape me, probably you wouldn't even have a mixtape me without Poobs. Like, you know what I mean? His dedication and honor to the craft and just the culture period is fucking amazing. He's an amazing writer. You know, I'm looking forward to our films getting out there one day.
Yep.
I fucking love him. That's my brother, man. I couldn't imagine. It's hard to do work without him. He structures all my albums and everything. I don't even bother to even with a sequence. But no matter what I do, I just send it right to Pools, whip me up a sequence. Like, you know what I mean? All that. So it's kind of like
he's your consigliere.
He's like a coach trainer.
Well, how did you meet him?
He's from Yonkers.
Yeah.
But like,
yeah,
just
everybody from Yonkers.
Well, I know that, but I'm saying, like, you know, like, do you remember, like, where you, like, what first brought him into the circle?
I knew Poobs when he was younger. I'm from up the block from where Poobs is from.
When you think back to growing up and running around Yonkers, you know, even before you were a young adult, talk about what Uptown meant and what relationship you might have had with Andre Harrell later on. Like, did you live for, like, Heavy D music? Did you appreciate the fact that, like, you know, that was Mount Vernon and it's not far from Yonkers and you know, it's like,
yeah,
a local guy made
I
good?
I love Heaven. I love P-Rock and CL Smooth, too.
Yeah.
So, I think Andre, shit, I wouldn't be on the phone with you probably right now if it wasn't for Andre Harrell, because that's what Puff on. So, I think in this game, we always have to pay homage to people who opened doors, you know, widened the path, and brought people along. So, may he sleep in peace. Cool dude, too, man. Always fucking cool. Always gave good advice. Down to earth. Always smiling. So, I'm thankful because, as I said, there would be no Andre Harrell, no Puff. You know what I mean? No Puff. You may never heard the locks in that how you were supposed to. So,
yeah.
May you sleep in peace.
For sure. And on that note, I mean, like, what was your relationship like with Fred the Godson?
Oh, Fred was my dog, man. Fred was my dog. God bless Fred, too, man. God bless Shooter, too. East is homeboy. That's my man, too. Fred was an incredible MC, man. His wordplay was ridiculous. I know we got a couple joints together. He used to always come check me on Castle Hill Juice Bar. He'll be well missed.
Yeah.
Obviously, you know, Jada's last album was dedicated to Ice Pick, Jay Jackson, Ignatius. Can you talk about what Ice Pick brought to your life?
Energy, intelligence, hope. I think his character and just what he brought to the table, period, was always... he's a great energy guy. He's a great moral guy. Great morale guy. Great spirit guy. You know, he was just an amazing individual, man. It's certain things like with music, like your Ice Picks and your Poobs, and you know, people are used to seeing the artist or the producer and kinda don't really get to see all the time the people who make the clock tick. You know what I mean? Who keep it ticking. Who's the mechanics of the thing. So, you know, Pick was a fucking battery. He was an absolute battery, and he was an absolutely beautiful soul. Still is. Not,
yeah.
Part of me with the was. Still is, you know, just not here physically. So, I just always appreciate all the energy he brought.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All
well, listen.
The ideas he brought.
Yeah.
I want to talk quickly about, like, some people that might have been running around New York around the same time as you that you didn't get a chance to record with at the time, but you know, maybe because, you know, you guys were doing your own thing and they were doing their own thing, or for whatever reason. But like, is there anybody else, is there anybody who you feel like you missed out on during your and their like prime young days?
I'm fucking still prime, Jeff. That's the fucking road.
Jeff tried to word that so well. Jeff was like, I don't want to offend him.
Nah, not really. I feel like I were. Oh, maybe Nas. I see Nas.
Why didn't that happen?
I don't know. We always say we're going to do it. We always say we're going to do it. We never do it. This is for years.
Styles, you have long talked about this Lox album coming out. Loyalty and Love has been recorded. It has been put out. You guys did a video for it. That exists. Is there an actual date for the Lox album? And if so, what are we working towards right now?
I say the Lox album should be out next month.
Oh.
July tops.
Do you feel like the sort of the hunger out there is still there for music like this? And I'm saying, like, you know, that same attitude of you have to feed your family and you have to make things work by any means necessary and you have to like make it to the next day. Do you feel like that is ever more present these days while we're all trying to figure out like what tomorrow looks like?
Not as much as it should be, to be honest, you know, but I think the whole point of music is you're going to get a little bit of everything. I think a lot of people do miss that and are looking for it. Then there's also a lot of people who aren't looking for it and just kind of want things. So I think my job as an MC is just, you know, to provide for those who do want. Like, you know what I mean? You can't. And knowing there's a fan base for it and knowing it's a core base for it and knowing there's people that's like it, you just provide. You can't worry about if it's the main shit, if it's the dopest shit, if it gets enough attention. Just knowing somebody's gonna listen, it's my job to provide. Just keep it going.
Well, listen, Styles, congratulations on this new album, Ghost Your Enthusiasm.
Thank you.
Available on all DSPs. I don't know if people still go to, you know, record stores or whatever, but
I do.
I'm sure it'll be there.
Yeah.
Shout out to Hovain. Shout out to Poobs. Shout out to Dazel. Shout out to, you know, Sheik and Jadakiss and
Noah
and everybody who was a part of this. Shout out to us, Jeff, because we fucking killed it.
And
listen, Styles, like I said, it's an honor to be on this project. Shouts to you for continuing to put out just dynamic verses every project. This is something that lasts forever, and we appreciate that both as fans and friends and family. Thank you for everything. Stay safe. Send our love to Adjua, to Noah, to everybody, and we'll
be checking
Madonna
out. To stop you know, doing whatever Madonna's doing.
Styles, you're the best.
Alright, y'all. Love. Talk to y'all later, bro.
Thanks everyone for listening to this new episode of A Waste of Time with It's the Real Jeff. People want to find out more about us. I'm Eric with the curly hair. You're Jeff with the glasses. Together we are It's the Real. No apostrophe, no spaces. Jeff, people want to find out more about this podcast, which is 5 years old. It's called A Waste of Time with It's the Real. Jeff, people want to find out more about the guys who lead off that Styles P album, Ghost Your Enthusiasm, in stores right now. Where can they go?
Literally anywhere. You can just go anywhere. Go to patreon.com/itsthereal. Join our Patreon today. If you really want to know who we are, go to itsthereal.com. There's links to everything. We have our Twitter at twitter.com/itsthereal. We are also on instagram.com/itsthereal.
You know what I really like, Jeff? I like when people go on our Instagram at instagram.com/itsthereal and they read a description from an episode and they say, how did you guys get into that conversation? The answer, just listen.
Yeah.
Just, that's it. Just press play.
It's really easy.
Jeff, now's the time of the podcast where we like to shout people out. Who would you like to shout out this week?
I want
to
shout out my man Jonathan at CVS.
Oh, shout out to Jonathan. We saw him this morning.
Yeah, he works there, and every time that anybody walks in, he goes, these guys are famous.
Well, he is right.
Yeah.
And we picked up some toothpaste, so now we are famous people with nice teeth.
Yeah, you can't see him behind the masks, but...
Jeff, I want to shout out a whole bunch of people who were so instrumental to A Waste of Time with It's the Real while we were actually having human beings over here for this podcast. I want to shout out Tommy Battle. I want to shout out Nick Watkin. I want to shout out Nia Adams. I want to shout out Justin Fleischer. I want to shout out Randy Snapgod. I want to shout out, man, a whole bunch of people. Lenz Anderson. I want to shout out
Anthony Gethers.
I want to shout out Carl Ferguson and Johan Cheriboga, who was our videographer. I want to shout out everybody who played a part in elevating this experience of A Waste of Time with It For Real for all you guys out there. We appreciate everybody who has subscribed on whatever platform you listen to us, and thank you for spreading the word. As always, guys, not for real, for real.
Sure, sure.
We'll see you guys next week.